Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, joined as always by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on today's show. We're going to lead the show off talking about some gappers on Friday's close, stocks that were gapping up and down into the close. We have a couple, three actually, big mergers in the news this morning. We're going to talk about those as well. We have Boeing continuing to get hit. A couple of earnings we'd like to discuss. Lumber Liquidators and Overstock, and then Tilray is after the bell today, so we'll talk about that. And we'll take the questions from our chats, both on youtube.com/BenzingaTV and premarket.benzinga.com. Our guest today, joining us at 8:35, is Michael Pachter, Senior Equity Analyst at Wedbush Securities. He will break down the video game and technology and streaming space for us then. Joel, what's the word here in the overnight markets?
Oh, we got a little green on the screen again, trading up three handles at 28.32.75, trying to improve on that high close in the move at 28.29.75. Our level on the upside, the high from Friday, 28.35.50, folks. And if you look on your daily charts, above 28.35.50, you got to look at 2,900, but we'll get into that a little bit later. On the downside, you got just below your daily pivot of 28.26 and 28.24. So that's your first target if we ever go down again. A crude trading up 11 cents here at 58.93. Kind of news on both sides of the coin in crude, but still hanging up near the high of the move. Couple highs, just over 59, 59.04, 59 a quarter, a couple targets for you crude traders. Gold up $1.50 at 13.04.40. Silver in the green as well by 2.6 cents at 15.35. Probably entering probably the slowest trading week of the year, right, Dennis, because of March Madness?
I don't know if there's a correlation there or not there, Joel, but I'm going to do some madness pools, I think, here, though. So I'll need some help from you guys because I like watching the tourney, but I don't watch anything else. I always go with Michigan for Joel, so I always usually take at least to the Sweet 16. I don't know. How far do I go?
Well, I'm a multiple bracket guy, right?
Okay.
But for this year, I'll do 3, 4, maybe even 5 brackets. And I always do an obligatory Michigan winning it all, right?
And you always
and I have to do it, right? I just have to throw away the 20 bucks because if they make it, then I don't want to be disappointed. And I've cashed over the years, but I think I'm going to do like 10 brackets, and I'm going to pick Duke. I'm going to be just like every other guy out there, Zion Williamson, two other freshman starters.
Duke is Duke. How are they just the team every year though? They're always like one of the favorites. Why? Just the program?
Well, Mike Krzyzewski, I think this is his 21st time as a number one seed. He's just a great coach and a great recruiter. Have you seen this Zion Williamson play? Have you seen this guy?
I actually did, and I don't watch a lot of college hoops, but I have seen him play. I mean, people talk Mount Zion, right? Don't they call him Mount Zion?
Yeah, I mean, he's just and they're probably going to have 3 out of the top 10 picks in the draft. So, anything can happen. They did lose 5 or 6 games this year, but, man, I keep looking. And, Michigan, maybe, the Elite Eight, they actually got an easier draw than Michigan State, even though they lost to them three times this year. So I don't know. I hate to be the favorite and going with what everyone else is. So I think it's going to be who picks Duke and somebody else. But Consult Drag T wants no sports. So we will move on to the market. Dennis, you had a busy.
This is not stocks and jocks, they say. We're 5 minutes talk college hoops. We want stock picks Monday morning.
Neither does JJ Bond. Okay,
there's nothing allowed. We don't talk. And we definitely don't talk hockey. So.
Okay. Busy after the close on Friday, huh? Triple D.
Yeah, you know what? It was interesting. And, you know, we got some news, and we're going to get to the news stocks here. Obviously, Boeing back in the news here this morning as well. But I just want to quickly cover, you know, 5 minutes on the close, because on the option expiration, especially with these quad witch ones, sometimes they can be muted activity. A lot of times we see some fireworks, especially on the close. And you saw some wild moves there on the close. Bring up the chart of Microsoft. Just with about 30 seconds to go, somebody sent an order, and I don't know if they were trying to send a closing order or what, but they sent a huge order to the market live. Stock was trading around 116.25, goes all the way down to 114.50, the low of the day. You can see the big bar there. That was a real print. It swept out everything in the book, and I didn't add it up, but it was a lot of shares. Like, it swept through, you know, probably at least 100,000 shares worth. So somebody sent an order to sell right now. And it just swept out everything in the book and knocked it all the way down, I think, to $114. And what was the low, 59 cents?
Yeah, 114.59. And I mean, I have the whole 15-minute bracket there. So 5 million traded on the bracket. I could break it down a little bit more while you're finishing. I could.
Yeah, you're just looking at that little line there. And, and then it was right back at 115.5. Like, it really popped right back. A second later. So this was with about 30 seconds to go all at the same time. I think it was actually 28 seconds to go. What I speculate happened is somebody was trying to send a closing order, maybe offsetting, you know, some type of amount or, you know, it could have been anything. And they sent the order live and it just swept out everything, because you'll see big orders going in for the close that they want to match up and cross it with other big institutional orders on the close. And that one just got sent to the market live. So with 30 seconds to go, Microsoft fell a buck and then bounced right back 1 second later. A little mini flash crash, if you will, for Microsoft, probably on somebody sending the wrong type of order again. But there was other ones too. Check out Coca-Cola, KO, fallen about 50 cents there in the last minute or two. Huge sell imbalances there. I did buy into those sell imbalances there because I often do provide liquidity. I can see those imbalances coming in on the close. And when I see that there's huge sellers on the close and it's not, you know, related to news, usually those bounce back here. So I'm actually still long some Coke from the close. I sold a bunch of it after hours last night in the 40s. It's now a bit up at 44. So I will be selling that here at the open. It was just a little, it's just obviously a fading and liquidity providing play there. We saw a lot of other ones too. We saw Intel fall off 20 cents. Pfizer rallied about 25 cents. I do have a trading position in Pfizer as well. BlackRock, BLK, fell $4 in the last minute and on the close gap down as well. So you did see quite a few moves, not as big as Microsoft really, or as noteworthy, because Microsoft is such a highly traded stock, but there was some movement on the close.
Do you try and just pick one low price and something like that and put an order in?
Multiple ways to do it. The best way, and it all depends on whether your broker allows it or not, is just put a limit on close. So in the case of Microsoft, you wouldn't have got it because that was not a closing order. That was actually hit on the book. So if you just had limits sitting out there on Microsoft, you would have got it. But on the close, you wouldn't have. In the case of like Coke, when I'm getting long a Coke on a play like that, is the stock's trading around 45.60, and I can see the huge sell imbalances. They were posted with 15 minutes to go. So I put LOC orders, this limit on close order, meaning I will take the other side of that trade, and I put my price. So I might put a price, say 45.45 for a bit, 45.40 for a bit, 45.35 for a bit, saying if Coke falls 30, 40 cents here on the close, I will buy that closing print. That's what that order is saying. It's called a limit on close order. And you can only send those. You can only send an LOC order if you're offsetting a large imbalance. You can't send it if you're initiating after 345. So before 345, you can put any on New York stocks, 350 on NASDAQ. But 345 is the cutoff time for initiating. But if you're offsetting a huge imbalance, they want that. They want traders offsetting them, because if they don't, the stock's going to go down a lot further. So basically in the imbalance is just advertising saying, hey, we have a huge seller here on the close. Can somebody help us out? I will help you out. I will be one of, you know, many people that will probably help you out. A lot of high frequency traders are going to be helping you out too. But these are just little market microstructure stuff that you need to know if you're trading, you know, at a professional level or even at a retail level. Because imagine you're trading Coke or you're trading, you know, Microsoft at the close, or you're trading, you know, JP Morgan or Intel or Pfizer or Waste Management or Ross Stores or BlackRock at the close. It's good to know, you know, even if you're going to come in, you know, and people say, oh, I'm long term, it doesn't matter. But as you're executing, if you're entering a trade or exiting a trade, you're all short term traders when you're making the trade. So why not get the best price possibly available? If I saw a huge imbalance on a stock at the close and I wanted to own it, I'd be waiting until the close to get it. And sometimes they flip and sometimes they do some other things, but often on option expiration, they're real and they do move the price. And in the case of Coke, they were advertising somebody huge to sell and it was real and it knocked the price down at the close.
Not as much fireworks off the open, more on the close. We did have the big selling bounces off the open, but they were bought up. The market went down only a couple points from that afternoon or that morning, 9:30 a.m. print at 19.25. So they were scooped up. Do you try to hedge those out or those?
Yeah, I try to hedge it as best I can, because when you're extracting a market inefficiency like that, if you're long just a whole pile of stock and the S&P tanks the next day, if you got to hold it overnight, in some cases you do because maybe you don't like the price you're getting. Like I said, I did sell some Coke up in the 40s because I thought that was a pretty good bounce back. I mean, it was getting a lot of it back, but I thought, you know, it might go more too. So I did hold on to a little bit. I try to hedge as best you can. I mean, when you're hedging Coke, you know, you kind of want to do, like, if you can do the XLP against it, that's the best, because I think it's almost 10% or maybe even more of the XLP. But, you know, you look and you try to get overall market neutral as best I can. So I always say, you know, if I've got, you know, a certain amount of stock, let's say you had $500,000 worth of stock you want to hedge out, figure out, you know, kind of your beta. And if it's roughly one, you can short $500,000 worth of SPY against it. There's different ways to do it. Obviously, if it's tech stock, I'd rather use Qs. If it's something like Coke or Procter & Gamble, I'd rather use XLP if possible. There's so many different ETFs, so there's different hedging tactics, but some of them aren't that liquid after hours. You know, SPY is always liquid. So, but you got to understand, if you're a long Coke, SPY is not a great hedge because Coke's often defensive. Sometimes Coke can actually go down. They can do some different things. So you got to kind of, you know, get a little bit creative sometime with the hedging, especially after hours if you just can't get a hedge on. But I try to stay market neutral as much as I possibly can. Most of my strategies trade market neutral. And what that means is my overall exposure to the market on any given day, I try to, you know, if I've got $1 million worth of longs, I try to be like $1 million worth of, you know, short. And obviously understanding the beta too. Like AMD, for instance, typically trades at least twice as much, you know, it'll move up twice as much as like the QQQ if you're using it. On any given day, if the Qs are up 0.5%, AMD's probably up over 1%. So you would never want to hedge that 1-to-1. You'd have to do twice as many Qs to AMD to be hedged. So there's all, you know, different, you know, ways to go about it. Microsoft is very 1-to-1. When you're doing Microsoft, typically it moves kind of with the Qs. And you know, so you can see this morning it's even working. Microsoft up 0.17% here this morning. The pre-market QQQ's up 0.13%. So you can see that hedge is working. That's trading market neutral and trying to just to take advantage of little market micro inefficiencies there where you got a big seller on the close. I'm not making a call. I'm just taking it. My call is that I think the stock can bounce back because that moved not for news. That moved because there's just a big seller in the market, and often those come back.
All right, we do have some earnings, a storage stock from a couple years ago, Lumber Liquidators. And boy, they were volatile last week, and there's a reason for it. Spencer, you have the LL report.
Yeah, the report was this morning, and they also had announced their settlement last week for the investigation into the securities fraud and from the lawsuits from a couple years ago. But I'll get to the earnings report first from this morning. Q4 EPS 17 cents versus a 12 cent estimate. Sales of 268 million versus 272 million. So an EPS beat and a sales miss for the quarter. This, like I mentioned, they had announced previously their $33 million settlement as the conclusion to the story brought upon by 60 Minutes a couple years ago with regards to the, I believe it was
formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde, thank you. Formaldehyde and their products from China. So that story is now over, and the earnings are out this morning, and the stock is down.
Down under 10 bucks. It did slip under there on Friday. It's not the first time. Obviously, back in beginning of January, it was under 10 bucks as well. I mean, there's just better places for your money. Like, you bring this up over the last couple of years, and yes, it had a great 2017 and bounced all the way back up to 40, but that was a gift for the longs. Obviously, hindsight's 2020. We can say that now. Stock's back under 10 bucks. I mean, it used to be over 100. They've never really recovered from those issues. So, yes, you know, they settled it out. And yes, you know, the company has moved on, but the stock has still underperformed massively over the course of the last 4 years, and especially even the course of the last year, went from 40 to 10. I mean, this isn't a stock in a clear downtrend. This is a stock that has a ton of overhead supply because everybody who has bought this in the last couple of years is now down in it. So I see no reason why this is going to bounce right back. It's so hard to bounce right back when stocks are in downtrends. Again, you know what Spinner and I, you know, talk about, and you know what I say on the show a lot is I like buying stocks that are in uptrends on pullbacks and selling stocks that are in downtrends or on pops. So I'm fading, you know, the overall trending move. This overall trending move is down. The stock is down again here, which means I'm not interested because there's no counter trend move here. This is, you know, move with the trend. There's going to be more people potentially washing out. I don't know. You know, maybe the report, you know, they shrug it off. Maybe it kind of bounces back. It can do anything like that. But I think as you get back up, you get back over 10, you have overhead supply issues once again. And the issue is not the same going down. I mean, this could be a stock that, you know, could end up falling right back down to the low of the year, which is right down to 913 or even lower. So no interest in the long side on this one.
960 pre-market low, 913, the January low. Not at this point, not getting a much of a bounce off that pre-market low. So if you want to pick this up, maybe in the lower nine handle today.
Yeah, but do you want to pick it up as my argument? I think
well, if you're short.
Well, if you want to short it, you know, I like it short better than long, but I'm probably not doing much on this one because this can be a wild child too, so especially off earnings. I don't know what the expected move was, but I bet you it was more than 5.7%.
Let's get to the mergers this morning because we do have
lots of
several.
What about the Boeing news first, though?
Boeing? Oh, there's a lot.
Yeah, because that's been widely traded, and the media is obviously, CNBC's probably covered a lot, but we might as well give it a little bit of love here. I mean, it's down $8. Market's giving it hate here. This now has made multiple lows. This 355, I'm looking higher than that. 363, 366, the lows from four of the last 5 days. 368, 365. Joel, we take that stuff out. You could be in.
Yeah, but I don't know. Trouble. I kind of thought that when it took it out that first time, you know. Well, the big day, you know, when it dropped, it was a gap fill.
Yeah.
Got the hard bounce, 365. And then, you know, I think a lot of people got faked out when it went to 363.33. So, I mean, it's still there. There's still pressure on it. Seems to bounce out of it every time. But I agree with you. It's pressing more.
Been down here too many times now.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're going to catch everybody who's trying to call the bottom, trying to get the hell out if this thing starts breaching 360. But what's the news today? Maybe that'll, you got to throw a little fun in with your technical analysis to make a better call, in my opinion.
Sure.
A
couple of headlines. They retrieved some data from the black boxes and they found clear similarities between the crashes of the Ethiopian Airlines plane and the Lion Air flight that crashed in October. So now it's a question. And then the second headline is from the Washington Post this morning that Boeing ignored pilots' concerns about the 737. So now it's just a question of what did Boeing know, when did they know it, and what do they do or not do about it?
The headline risk in here is incredible. And that's why I want no part of buying this at 363, 364, 365. I've been down here too long. I don't know enough information. Could it bounce back? Yes, it could. If they're found that, you know, they're completely, you know, that it wasn't the plane's fault. But it sounds like from, you know, as we get more and more headlines, it's looking more and more like it's potentially the plane's fault. So the similarities thing keeps happening, and that's why it's not lifting. And I mean, this is, you know, going to be a huge, you know, this could be a small issue. Maybe they figure out what caused it and fix it right away, but there could be some lawsuits coming from this. There's a lot of issues potentially going to happen from this. That's why I think there's, again, safer places for your money than Boeing right now.
I'll mention that 363.33 low. Also keep in mind there's people long from much lower levels than when you're buying it at 363.33, you know, on any kind of rallies. The only other thing too is how long did it take, Chipotle when they started getting the bad news in that
Cheers.
Issue? Yeah, I know.
A year at least, and I'd say even more than that. And they obviously nothing to do with each other, but it's a good point you're making, Joel. When you get these, you know, issues, you know, obviously, you know, there's going to be issues here now with the planes. I mean, this could take a while. This is going to, you know, they've got to recall all these planes, or if they got to, you know, do changes to them all, it's going to cost some money here too. So a lot of unknowns. just a lot of unknowns.
I mean, I'll just give you this example here. CMG really fell off the, I believe it started in September of 2015. You can tell when the stock was trading at its all-time high. I think it was actually in December of 15. I think it started to come off before. But that stock did not bottom until over 2 years later. And it bottomed in February of 2018 at about a third of the price. So, you know, will there be a quicker resolution? I mean, it's just news out there, headlines, people longer from much lower levels. But for now, we'll just keep an eye on 363.
Consider that, too. The stock has been an unbelievable performer there. So you do have a lot of people who are out money in this thing, too, still. That Spencer saying 365. I'll say the same thing. I kind of just said 363, 364 lows in the same area. We start reaching 360. Getting down below that, I think it'll be at 340 in a heartbeat. So, and it's not bouncing out of here. And I think with good cause, it's not bouncing out of here because it's looking more and more like it's their fault.
Yeah. So. And yeah, one final thing on this too, we can move on. But, you know, I don't think we have Nick on this week, but, you know, selling puts, a very popular strategy in this raging bull market. If you decide that you want to sell a put in this one, then sell another put lower to, you know, at least to cover yourself where you know your max loss. So this is, you know, if you look at candidates of not to be selling puts on, this would be the one.
I would think puts. Too, like the headline. Again, it's going to be elevated, so maybe you want to get those premiums. But that's why we do love the way that Nick does it, because he sells, he'd sell like the 350 and then like, you know, buy the 340 or 330, at least for protection. And in the event that, you know, this is a lot bigger issue than the market thinks it is, and the thing goes down to 300, you're not just in big trouble. So
you know,
he always tries
lost.
To protect
yep.
himself. Yeah, because, you know, and again, yeah, you're not extracting as much because you're going to be buying a lower put to protect yourself. But it's like insurance on your written put, which is a good idea. And that's why it's, you know, his site is called, what's his site called? Just give it again, SUP. His MarketFi product?
Sell spreads and create income with option spreads are
yeah, spreads. That's why it's spreads and not just sell puts.
Okay.
We're giving you some free advertising. You're listening out there. You might be sleeping still, but yeah, he's probably awake. Nick's always awake.
Merger Monday here. Where do you want to start with this? We got
start with the real merger.
Start with the what?
Oh, the real one, the one that's done.
The real one. Okay, yeah. So there are three. Two are being reported and are in various stages of development. One is actually confirmed this morning, and that is WorldPay is getting is merging with FIS. WorldPay shareholders are getting 0.9287 FIS shares.
Right, write that one down. 0.9287.
Yep, and $11 in cash.
And $11 cash.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what you need to know. Your risk arbitrators out there, your ratio 0.9287. So what that means is that FIS will move up 0.9287 on WP. So going forward, obviously the first day is still, you know, risk arbs are still trying to figure out, you know, what the premiums and risk premiums are going to be. But that's the way to do it. So WP trading up $10 on this. FIS trading up. Well, WP is the one getting bought. So
I yep. said Yeah, take it out new all time. I guess WorldPay is ending up a lot better than World.com, right? Or WorldCom back from...
Oh, you were dating yourself again. Yes, we did have a WorldCom bankruptcy back in the year 2001. WCOM. But I traded that, WCOM.
That was a big one. I don't know if Bernie's out of jail yet, but it looks like there's a pretty good possibility. I mean, with the premium and you're adding the cash in here, looks like they're pretty confident about this deal going through. The acquirer is trading up $1.17.
Yeah,
that's FIS. We'll see if that holds. They did take it lower, then brought it back up, traded over 112. Let's see what the big players in this one will be keeping an eye on that closing price from Friday, 108.88, to determine long term if they like this deal or they don't like the money they're spending on it.
What are the other rumors here going on?
This one is, you know, been rumored and now it's being confirmed that they're in discussions, Deutsche Bank and Commerce Bank. They've announced that they are in exploratory merger talks with each other. And the other one this morning is Caesars. That's right. I couldn't remember it for a second.
Yep.
Caesars, and this has also been rumored, Caesars and El Dorado. This has not been rumored, but this is a report from Reuters yesterday that they are in exploratory merger talks, CZR and ERI. this morning. So those are, so we got German banks and we got casinos this morning.
Okay, so Deutsche Bank was rumored. We've already had the pop on that once. Yeah. Popping again here because obviously now it's the companies themselves saying that there is talks going on here. So we have confirmation that there is a lot to these rumors here. That's why Deutsche Bank is trading up 5% here in the pre-market. So it's a big pop for DB. Just going over the other one, we can cover them both, I guess. I'm kicking myself a bit on this one because I had it on my sheet written down. We know Icon got involved with Caesars, and I've been thinking about it for a bit and saying, man, we haven't heard. It's been quiet on the Caesars front here for a bit, but we know Icon's in there kicking around.
Yeah.
And when he's in there, you know, often stuff does materialize here, and the stock could pull back significantly. When we found the Icon stake, the stock after hours, I think, was over $10. It's now down to 8, so you were getting it on the cheap. Now it's 8:48. It's popping this morning, but had on my list to look at, and I didn't pull the trigger, and I didn't look at it either. I get lost in my list sometimes, which is always full of too many stocks. But Caesars here get a nice lift because there's obviously rumors here.
9:34. Someone got real excited at 6 o'clock this morning. Took this up to 9.
Gotta watch trading at 6 o'clock. Don't just start lifting offers thinking you got all the information. You're gonna be making money because you overpay. There's just no liquidity out there, especially some brokers don't even come online till 7 a.m. for the pre-market. Like there's a lot of brokers that do not allow you to trade before 7 a.m. We know if you've got professional and you can get an ARCA and NSDQ open at 4 a.m. for trading. But the liquidity of 4 a.m. is almost nothing. First of all, most people are sleeping in North America. Secondly, is that a lot of the other exchanges are online. Edge and all of those retail exchanges don't come online at all until 7 o'clock. So liquidity is just low. So when you're buying something at 6 o'clock and you're just lifting offers, there's not much out there. And then some real liquidity comes in afterwards and you might regret doing that. So just be cautious. You're trading before 7 a.m. It's thin out there.
Yeah, and I'm just going to look at an area of interest. We have pulled back off that pre-market high. For me, the level of interest is going to be a pair of highs that you have. This is called 875, a high at 873, 876. You got to work your way up there, then a couple highs at 9. So there's your resistance, but important to get the follow through right off the open. El Dorado, ERI. No one is making a market in this one
bit
yet.
Bit up. Are they're the one that's potentially going to do the acquiring, right? This is the rumor?
It's more of a merger, isn't it, of equals?
That's what it would be. Anyway, ERI is bid up at 47.10 for 3,000 shares.
Somewhat
significant. So, I mean, this is a little bit more, obviously, it's a higher price stock. So, you know, 60 cents on a higher price stock is not as much. We see Caesars trading up 5%. That's only equivalent to 1.5%. But it is bid up. So it's telling you nobody's hitting that bid either. So it says it wants to go higher.
Yeah. And for this one, just a bunch of highs to contend with. It's called 47.75 if we get up to that area. That's capped all the rallies since March 5th. So we'll keep an eye on the news on that one. As far as the Deutsche Bank, I mean, who wants to own Deutsche Bank? Who wants to do a deal with them?
I don't know. Apparently Commerce Bank.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one as well. DB, is it still single digits here? Yeah.
Still 932. Yeah. It's up 5%. It's a good lift.
Good move for it. Okay. And was there one more? Or did that cover the...
I think it was the three. Was there another one?
Nope. Those were the three that I saw this morning.
Yeah. If there's anything else, let us know. Chat. PHAS. You want to talk this one, Joel. This is getting one of your big movers of the day. It's up 100%. There's one of these every day right now. One of these little drug stocks, little biotechs, little pharmaceutical plays that seem to just start getting a bid and pops. And this morning, this is the one near... little biotech of the day or whatever it is. I've never heard of it. But PHAS, Phase Bio, getting a huge lift. What's the news on this
one? Well, you probably haven't heard of it because they only IPO'd in October. So
yeah.
I should add it to my list of stocks.
It's a recent IPO, and they got highlighted. A study done by the New England Journal of Medicine highlighted one of their drugs over the weekend. And it's also the data is also being presented at a conference. And I haven't read the study. I don't typically read these things, but Wall Street loves it.
They loved it a lot at 7:15 this morning when they took it up to 11:79. Let me see.
Holy cow. People get so excited. I mean, they see it and they think, oh, this is going to be the next one that's going to be up, you know, from 5 to 50, so I just got to pay. It's like, you know, not a lot of stocks go from 5 to 50. We know we've seen that happen a few times. And there's been, what was the recent one that really took off? Do you remember? Wasn't it like $5 or $6 went up to 50? The chat will know. Say, a lot of those guys trade some of this stuff.
There's all silence out there.
But there was one that just recently took off. Like,
did it begin with an A?
AMID from Spinner. That was the one?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't it.
No.
No, no. This was last week. It was. Was it AKTA?
Do you remember? There was one.
Yeah, I can't.
BPTH. There it is.
Biopath.
Thank you,
Biopath.
BPTH.
That was it.
Biopath. That went from, okay, so it was $1.98 on February 28th, and it was $73 on March the 7th. So a week later, it went from like $1.90 to $70. So that's what people are playing this stuff, and they're buying this. The people who are buying that up at $11 think this is the next Biopath. Maybe it is, but they're already getting that purchase because we're trading the 7 handle here now. So there's not a lot of, you know, stocks that go from 2 to 70 in a week.
And S&P still, we're up two handles, 28, 31, 75 up top. Your pre-market high has come up just short of Friday's high, which was 35.50. Pre-market high stands at 34.75. So there is your big number on the upside. And keeping an eye staying green here, your close from Friday, the high close of the move, 28.29.75. Dennis, we seeing anything in imbalances?
Oh, you know what? They're pretty small here. I'm trying to scramble to find anything significant. They're all small. Obviously, we had some big moves we know on Friday. There is a few sell imbalances, which is always interesting because they are up four handles here. See Procter & Gamble with 50,000 to sell. That's notable, but there's nothing here that, like, well, you got to check this out. So I don't see anything really crazy going on here. We're going to Michael Pachter in 3 minutes, too. So just before we get him, can we just quickly talk Dell? Because DEL has been an absolute monster. I'm kicking myself so hard here because I was on the show. Obviously, this was like Wednesday or Thursday. And I had bought the stock ahead of the Cramer interview. And then it popped up 50, 60 cents. And I was like, okay. And then I sold it. And then I was kind of regretting the sale even on the show and saying, I was like, I like the fundies on this. I'm like, this is one I'm actually interested in my long-term investment portfolio. And the stock was trading the 55 handle when I said that 2 days ago. This was Thursday morning. And now it's over $60. So it's up 10% from when I said I liked it, and I didn't buy it in my long-term portfolio. So now I'm like hoping for a pullback here. So stocks is, you know, supposed to make $5-6 or whatever it's supposed to make. I mean, it's trading cheap. It's got a story. It's back here again. I mean, and on the exchange here, it's got all the cards that, you know, could drive this thing higher here. I hope I get a pullback back in the mid, you know, maybe 56, 57 to pull the trigger to buy this thing. But this is one I want on a pullback.
Maybe we should get it.
I'm just not pulling back. I was hoping for a pullback Friday. Went up another $3.
Sometimes,
you know, when you just like something, you just got to pay up and not try to get the best price. I could have bought it at 56 on Thursday, and obviously I'd be up at 60 now. Now I'm hoping to get it like 57 or 58. And then, you know, who knows? It might go up here again. It's already trading up again here this morning. The stock is hot now.
How about we create a new filter, and it's the Cramer Triple D. If Cramer
we both
comes,
like a stock?
Yeah. You just
pull the trigger. Both Cramer hands. Liked that, and then I liked it because I often don't like Cramer's picks, but I like that one. And he was on the show. I mean, Michael Dell was on the show. So, you know, when's the last time Michael Dell did a public interview like that? So you knew that was probably going to kickstart it, but the follow through has been absolutely incredible.
Yeah, Mr. Market's been helping out too. All right, Spencer, we got Mr. Pachter coming on here at 8:35.
We do. A longtime friend of the program, senior equity analyst at Wedbush Securities, breaks down the digital media space, video games, all that stuff. So we'll be right back in a moment here with Michael Pachter from Wedbush. All right. And as promised, we are live with Michael Pachter, senior equity analyst for Wedbush Securities. Michael, how is it going out in California this morning?
Oh, it's dark as you can believe, and pretty cold. But I think we're going to have a beautiful 80-degree day. So
what do you define as cold?
Chuck, I think it's about it's under 60 probably. Oh. I'll let you know in about 5 seconds if you got time. I'll let 70. It's actually 70 right now. Oh, 55 right now. 70 right. On the way to bed.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning here out on the West Coast. So early start to your day, but an early end as well. One topic, and we've talked with you a lot about, is the esports and e-gaming, and a little piece in Barron's here about esports coming of age. And what they were talking about was the advertising market. And I'm looking at the numbers here, and it says, it's going to pass 200 million by 2020. That doesn't seem like a huge number to me, but obviously that's something that you're looking at when you're analyzing these stocks. I mean, is there going to be, could that be a low number for the ad revenue for some of these e-gaming stocks?
Oh, I mean, I think you said it right. It's a tiny number. And so if it's low, it's low by 20 or 30 million. It's not low by a billion. Facebook does 68 billion a year is my estimate for this year. So that's, I think I'm doing the math right. That's something like 200 million a day. So Facebook does 200 million a day. I get that that's global, but 200 million for a year for the entire sports industry is really not impressive at all. I guess the interesting thing is, television advertising revenue in the 1950s was probably something like 200 million. So, it's comparable to any nascent industry, but it's still tiny. And it will grow as it attracts more eyeballs. The way to attract more eyeballs is to give consumers something that they find interesting to watch. And I think the analogy right now to regular sports is it's probably, like a combination of bowling and tennis revenue. And it's got to move on to golf, get to be that big before it can, take baby steps and become as big as baseball and then basketball and then football. It's going to take a long time before it gets to be a giant industry. And it's incumbent upon the publishers to give us content we want to watch.
All right, moving on to some of the big dogs here in the sector. EA, the stock was having a hard time. They come up with, I believe, Apex Legends here. Just a tremendous move in that. Really digesting the move is here. So just looking at it from a market cap perspective here and the potential revenue for that game here, was it equal? Or obviously the street thought it was a little much when they took it up over 105 here. Do you see that, the revenue growth commensurate with what they added to market cap when that game was announced?
Yeah, they have 300 million shares. So, so a 20-point move in the stock, which is about what it's done, is about a $6 billion move in market cap, and it had been over $7 billion. That implies that, somebody thinks Apex is going to throw off, something like $200 million in profit. And, I guess that's right. It could. It's only been a little over a month. I think they launched February 5th or 6th or something. And they have 50 million downloads, which sounds like a really impressive number. It is. I mean, I'm impressed by that. But keep in mind, Pokemon Go has 800 million downloads. So this is a small fraction of Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go is only doing about 800 million in revenue. Now, I don't know that you can say each download is worth a dollar per year in revenue. You have to see where the active user figure stabilizes. And most of these games measure monthly active users. It's only been a month. So all 50 million people played in the last month. So, that's the monthly active user number today. But let's wait 6 months and see. If the monthly active user number is 50 million, then the game really can do 500, 600 million, and it probably can generate 200 million in profit. And the move is warranted. If it has, only 10 million monthly active users after 6 months, then the revenue and profit figures are going to be much lower than what I just said. And the stock price move is probably unwarranted. So we just have to wait and see.
Hey, Michael, Dennis Dick. Just even on the EA, though, because it got initially hit, like the day after earnings, they hit the stock hard. And it was down $90 and was trading in the 70s. I think even after hours, it was down 74. And then they come out with this game, and everybody just forgets totally about, you know, the disappointing earnings report, and it's all about the game. What are your thoughts here? You know, first, if, you know, this game doesn't, you know, obviously this, you know, Apex Legends doesn't hold up these monthly users, is there issues here on EA? Because there were issues the day after that earnings report before this game came out.
Yeah, you know, questions like that are the only reason that I exist.
You're asking
the right question. Look, EA did $3.91 in earnings in the year that ended March 17, and then they did $4.39 the next year, and they had guided to, you know, $4.85 this year, and they're now guiding to $3.85. So, you know, if you take the three-year trend, 391, 439, and now 385, there's no growth there. And it was the guidance down to that low a number. They had previously been saying 450. They'd only dropped the number 35 cents. When they said 385, people said, wait a minute, zero growth. What do I want to pay for 385? And the answer was 20 times. And so it traded that low. I mean, that's why it got down to $78. Yes, they have a lot of cash, and yes, some people give them full credit for the cash, but they also pay out a lot of stock-based comp. When you net those two, the cash isn't really as big as it sounds. And realistically, the reason that earnings dropped by a full dollar this year is they screwed up. I mean, this is not a shift of a big launch. This isn't like Disney with Wonder Woman. I'm sorry, Warner Brothers with Wonder Woman pushing the movie out, you know, 6 months, and it pushes it out of the fiscal year. All their games came out. They just sucked. And that's a serious problem. Battlefield went from 15 million for Battlefield 1 to only 7 million or 8 million for this past version. Anthem came out. It was terrible. So Apex saved them. And I think they're making bad games. I mean, they literally had four or five disappointing games with the last couple of Star Wars and Battlefield and Anthem in the last couple of years. And I think investors seriously have begun to question management's ability to execute. Adding to that, they lost a lot of good development talent. They lost Jade Raymond, who was making a super secret project, but she invented Assassin's Creed. She's now at Google running their games division. They lost Patrick Soderlund, who was their head of studios. They lost Aaron Flynn. They lost Matt Bromberg. They lost Amy Hennig. They really lost a lot of great developers. And I think investors are getting tired of it. So they were being punished. And then they bought Respawn, who's making Apex. And Respawn shocked us with Apex. So that came out of nowhere. It launched the day before earnings. And I think the idea of the day before earnings launch was to distract us from the bad that was coming. Didn't work for the first day. And said, oh, Apex has 10 million downloads. And suddenly people got excited. And you're right in your prelude to this answer. Everybody just forgot everything EA's done wrong and focused on Apex. So that's great. And if it works, then they deserve the credit. If it ends up just being an average, you know, performer in the next year, then they're not going to deserve it. I actually think it's going to be good. I think it's going to continue to be good. It's great. They love it. They're going to keep playing. We'll just see if they spend money in the game.
You see Activision Blizzard and Take-Two coming out with something similar. I mean, this is obviously, you know, going right at Battle Royale. Is this, you see, you know, the two main competitors here, ATVI and Take-Two are coming out with games similar?
Well, similar is a great word because the answer is no, I don't right away. And it's not because Battle Royale is hard. The Apex is that Apex is the first time a major publisher took a game out from behind a paywall. And by paywall, I mean Call of Duty Blackout came out in November. We're not talking about that. And it's not bombing, but in order to play, that's a battle royale game. In order to play Call of Duty Blackout, you have to buy Call of Duty. So the audience is limited to the 20 million or so people who purchase Call of Duty, which means it doesn't have more than 20 million players and can't and won't. It might get to 25, but it's not going to get to 50 because you have to buy the game to play it. And so EA did something really bold here. They put the Battle Royale game out free, and they're using that as a tease to get people to buy a new Titanfall game that's coming in the next fiscal year, which will be $60. But they put the free-to-play Battle Royale experience in front of the paywall instead of behind it. And so the question, you know, will Take Two or Activision do that? No way. I mean, they've got to figure out how to do that. Activision can respond by making Overwatch free to play, and I actually expect them to do that. But Overwatch is not Battle Royale. Overwatch is a regular six-member team shooter game with a bunch of different skilled characters. That is not going to work as a Battle Royale, and I don't think they'll do it. Call of Duty Blackout, unfortunately, wasn't built to monetize. It was built to engage and give people something to do. It's not set up to have season passes and get people new skins and stuff. So that'll be to free to play. So no, nothing similar in the near term, but I do expect that they will emulate EA's success. It's probably a 2020 event for each of those companies.
Michael, I want to switch gears for a second here and talk about Turtle Beach. The company had earnings last week. I guess their quarter was okay, but they lowered or their guidance came in lower than estimates for the fiscal year. You maintained your outperform rating and you raised your price target, I believe, from $22 to $30.
I took my target down.
Oh, sorry, down. Right, down. Sorry, down from $30 to $22. But you still got your outperform rating on it. Explain the bull case here for Turtle Beach. It's come a long way off its highs.
Well, I mean, the easy answer is they suck at guidance. So they actually, I think that they put out a like 30-slide packet that accompanied their guidance, which if you read through it, it demonstrates that they actually don't know how to guide. They make comments in there like, hey, and I have to use numbers from memory, I could be wrong here, but something like 11 million headsets were sold last year, but it had been 8 for the prior few years, so we're assuming it's going back to 8 next year. Well, why? You know, it went up from 8 to 11 because of Fortnite. It's going to stay at 11, in my view, because of Apex, and it could actually grow because they're selling more internationally, so where they're measuring the market, they're not measuring and they're on PC and they weren't before, so they're not including that. So I actually think they're just terrible at guidance, and so their guide down killed the stock. But we have to assume they know more about their sales than we do, and so I had to take my numbers down in line with their guidance, because why be a hero and say this stock that has gotten cut in half is going to do a lot better than management says it is? So I took my target down, and my target is 10 times EBITDA, which is actually pretty cheap. And that got me to $22. And since the stock is at 15, that's still plenty of upside. That's why the buy recommendation. My bias is that they're probably going to print revenues very similar to this past year. And they're probably going to beat handily on both the EBITDA and EPS line. And the stock is probably going to go up. But if you have a management team that says, no, our revenues are going to drop a lot and just, we have no confidence in the future, why would you invest in it? And I think that's the problem. Management hand saying how terrible things are about to become. Oh, by the Q1 is flat year over year. So the year down a lot, but Q1's fine. They just have a crystal ball and they think it's going to evaporate at holiday of 19. They don't know, neither do I, but you know, you poor investors have to guess. And I think most investors are saying if management says things are going to be bad, then we assume they're going to be bad. They don't know, nor do I.
Just a quick question going back to the e-gaming sports. And I look at these stocks, they've had the big pullbacks. But I think one thing about, you know, the long-term trepidation about being involved in these stocks is like the demographics. And you could talk about a little bit more specifically. But, you know, to me, it's a lot of these younger kids. I mean, how much money do they have from their paper routes, you know, to spend on these games? So maybe it's more of a generational shift. Maybe when these people move up and get jobs and having things to have more disposable income to spend. So just to me, you know, the demographics, I mean, I know there are older people like yourself and probably people in our chat participate, but for me, your target audience, if you're going for this younger demographic, I mean, where's the real money going to come from?
Everything you just said is wrong. I hope that's not the most offensive thing you hear all day. No, kids have more money than ever. And that's why, you know, Snapchat exists. I mean, that audience has a ton of money. Parents are incredibly indulgent. Baby boomers are just crazy indulgent and leaving all their wealth to their children and grandchildren. And, you know, kids have a lot more money than they've ever had. If kids had less money, you would see box office dropping 10% a year. And it's not, in spite of all the threats to box office. I mean, it's actually going up 1% a year. So, no, they have plenty of money. They are self-indulgent. They actually go to Starbucks. I have identical twin 19-year-olds. One of them actually got a job. It's shocking me, but in college, and they spend like there's no tomorrow. No, kids have tons of money. By the way, headsets, the average headset is $49. So we're not talking, and lasts 3 years. So we're not talking about, you know, giant amounts of wealth to accumulate in order to buy a headset. So no, there's plenty of money to buy a game, plenty of money to buy headsets, great stocking stuffers, indulgent baby boomer parents and grandparents who give their kids anything they ask for. So nope.
All right. We've been on with Michael Pachter, a senior equity analyst at Wedbush Securities. Michael, as always, thank you very much for the time today.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Before we wrap today, I want to get to the ratings now. There is some commentary being made this morning on Facebook. I want to bring it up anyway. Yesterday, Facebook came out and said that they had removed themselves 1.5 million videos of that terror attack in New Zealand from last week. You have to wonder what ramifications that could have on the stock. Well, this morning we're getting some analyst commentary on that. Needham downgraded Facebook to hold, and Bank America has lowered their price target to $187 from $205, and both sort of on that theme of A, privacy, but also the network effect of what is causing all these people to upload 1.5 million videos of this attack, and Facebook's just inability to control the situation. So a couple of headlines here weighing on Facebook this morning.
Still got this in the long-term portfolio. 160, the stock needs to hold. This is the big level. And we've come far enough that you almost feel like it wants to test it. You know, often you'll see, you know, Jeremy Newsom talks with us often, you'll see the big level get taken out by 50 cents and then rally back up over it as people say, okay, well, this is it. Trigger those stops, and then it gets back up over it. But 160 is the line in the sand. The absolute low of the move is 159.59. That's back on February 21st. And then you start getting to the gap, and then it's a slippery slope all the way down to 150. So the bull case needs to hold 160. I'll say the bulls are still in control despite all the bad headlines. It's been like 2-3 bad headlines in a row here for Facebook in a row. But the buy the dippers are still somewhat lurking, because we saw this on Friday. Stock got really weak, and it did come back and actually close fairly strong. But another headline here this morning knocking it back down. But I think he got some support at 160, at least the first time.
They talked about, well, they got their upgrade last week, same day as Apple, didn't get the follow through. And then also some of the other news that it had last week, they talked about, you know, changing the platform again to make it more dedicated to, you know, user, you know, between smaller groups and stuff. And last time they came out with that kind of change, they really hit the stock. It was kind of a delayed reaction. And then, unfortunately, we had that news at the end of last week here. I agree with Dennis. I agree with everyone in the chat here. You know, the technicals, if you're hanging on to this one, you had that gap. And then, you know, you got down to 159. So you got to be holding it here above 160. After that, you get yourself into the gap area. A lot of negative news and not rallying in a strong market, especially when I keep going with the ratings. We did miss Overstock, but we can get that at the end.
Yeah, let's go keep going down the ratings here.
Sure.
OKTA catching an upgrade this morning from Goldman Sachs to buy. They're raising their price target from $80 to $94 on OKTA.
I mean, we know Goldman, very influential, and it's a name that is loved. Obviously, we saw this big washout low. Was that earnings when it got down to $70? What was that?
Let me check here.
For 5-6 days ago, I'm looking at the 8th. 8th of March, went from 79 down to 7.
That was earnings, yes.
Yeah, and then rallied all the way back up. Again, there's a stock that's giving you a dip opportunity. It's been a stock that's been in an uptrend for a long time. I mean, you can go to the weeklies and you can see what I'm talking about. 2018, beginning of 2018, so just over, 14 months ago, stock was $25. It's now 82. This is a stock that's in the definition of a nice long-term uptrend. So it's a stock that I like to buy on the dip. Wish I would have been buying the $70. Obviously, I was not in this case. But I'll just say, if I was trading this, I'd be looking for dips to buy. I never like buying stocks when they're ripping, because you're buying somebody else's profits there. So that's why I probably, I wouldn't be shorting this, because this isn't a clear uptrend. This is a stock that could blow through the highs. This is a stock that could be $100 in a month, or even less, because these things get hot, these stories, and they move. And OKTA is hot. and Goldman's upgrading the stock probably at the right time. It dipped on Friday. They used that opportunity to upgrade the stock, and the stock's already trading up 4.78% to this. We do have some resistance overhead, but the stock's in a clear uptrend, so I'm not fading the move.
Interesting area where if it opens now, would open into it, trading just off the highs of the pre-market session at $83. After that big dip, you had a nice rebound back. That rebound was capped right at the $83 area, or $83.33, and then $82.78 high your last few days, and another daily high at $83.11. So we'll see. I mean, so far this area from $83 to $83.33 has been targeted as a sell area. We'll see if it can continue on the upside. No really clear resistance off that after that until your March high at $87.32 and the all-time high in February at $87.72.
Sticking with Goldman here, a trio of calls on, I guess you would call it like the online car space, not really sure. They are upgrading Car Gurus, C-A-R-G, to buy, raising their price target from $43 to $48. They are initiating cars.com at a neutral, and they're assuming TrueCar at a sell. So Car Gurus gets a buy, cars.com gets a neutral, TrueCar gets a sell.
What's Car Guru symbol?
C-A-R-G.
I'm sorry, Spencer, what was that?
C-A-R-G.
C-A-R-G. Okay. I do not trade this one, and I don't know anything about it. It is bid up here this morning. 39.45. I guess I'll add this to my list. If Goldman's given a coverage here, it's probably worth covering. I don't know how I haven't been trading this one. It's been out for a while, but I'll add it to my list. CARG 39.50 is, or 39.45 is the bid, is an odd lot bidding at 90 shares there, but 39.30 is the public bid for 500 shares right now. Nobody's hitting that bid. Again, it's upgraded by Goldman. It looks like it wants to go over $40 to me. You see the highs in the last few days, 40.10, 40.16, 40.20. I wouldn't be surprised if it blows through those highs here today. I think the stock's going to be off to the races.
There's your resistance, a couple highs just above four. I mean, I'm looking at probably five highs since March 5th, right? Let's call it 40.20. Yeah, you got a little ways to go to get to that. But that's
Goldman upgrade, though, is going to be a nice kickstart to take those out. So watch this one for breakout over those highs.
Yep, keep an eye on it. If maybe not today, you could keep it on your radar here. But Goldman kind of picking a bottom down here. Did you want to
comment? They did that a couple of their ratings here today, buying the pullback.
They did. A couple more I want to hit on real quickly. Where is it? Dollar General catching an upgrade from Barclays to overweight this morning, raising their price target from 102 to 125. And was that?
Why the dip just lurking in Dollar General? I mean, you had the disappointing earnings report, $120 down to $108. Here we are 2 days later, and we're trading near 115. I mean, you're getting two-thirds of losses back already here. These buy the dippers, can't shake them.
No, and it's getting into a scary area if you are short because you got the big old gap from earnings. Currently trading above the high from Friday, which is 114.57. So can't give you any good resistance until you get the gap fill at 119.70. On a pullback, maybe try and pick this up flat on the session. I'm not sure you're going to get that with that kind of analyst action. 113.89 was the close. So if you're looking to pick it up on the cheap, was it Overstock that had earnings, Spencer?
Yeah, yes, it was. Yeah. They had earnings.
Let's wrap it up with Overstock.
This morning, Q4 EPS for OSTK of $1.39 loss versus 91-cent loss estimate. So about 40 cents below the estimate there. Sales of $453 versus $474 million. So they missed the estimate on both the EPS and sales in the Q4.
Stocks turned, though. And we turned at the beginning of January, and maybe it's, you know, Bitcoin has stabilized. We know this was a crypto play for a long time. But it's turned. So, you know, it's clearly, when you go out to the longer term charts, it's clearly in a downtrend. So, you know, my normal thought process here is just, you know, I'm not interested. But for some reason, I feel differently on this one. And it's not a long term. This would just be a trade because I still think, you know, long term, I don't know enough about, you know, and if you're, I don't know if it's crypto, this isn't a pure crypto play either, but it was for a while. I don't. I think you got some buyers down the 18 level though.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you're going to get down there though. And I think there could be some buy the dippers lurking on this too. People who have been watching this thing go from 14 to 22. And if you were short the thing, and I don't know, what's a short interest? You have that in front of you?
There's some short interest on this puppy? I can grab it quickly.
JJ Bud says it's heavily shorted here.
That's what I'm wondering, if it's heavily, because this could actually knock me down as much as you think. What's a short interest?
A short percent of float? Whoa, 74%.
Yeah, you know what? This is squeeze them. And obviously they're pulling back here, but this is a very disappointing earnings report, and it's not down that much. This could be one that could squeeze them, and I wouldn't be surprised this thing actually. I don't know. I'd like to buy the dip on this somewhere, but I don't know where is the problem. And I don't think it's getting 18.
How about 18.55?
You like that level? I don't know. You think it gets down? What's it done pre-market? What's it?
It's off the low. I mean, it's one
what's
of those.
Low? What's the pre-market low?
19.04.
Maybe you try that lower 19s if you get there. I don't know. I don't think this is going to get killed today. I don't know why. This is a very disappointing report, but I think that short interest is going to keep it up. So this could be one that shrugs it off and ends up green. And a very disappointing report. And then the media will find a reason, but I think it's just, I don't know. I almost want to buy this pullback here on Overstock on this terrible report. So maybe I got to give my head a shake here, but I don't know why. My spiny senses say don't short this one and possibly buy this dip on this one.
All right. That's pretty. Oh, I didn't realize, Spencer, it's 9:02 here. So you want to wrap things up? Time flies when you're talking about stocks.
Time flies when you're having fun. That'll be it for today's show. Thanks to everyone who joined us on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Thanks again to Michael Pachter. If you missed any part of our show, our podcast is on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. Please remember all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Hope everyone had a good weekend. Hope you have a good rest of your day, and we will see you folks on Tuesday. Have a good one.